Welcome to Business Game Changers, where you'll hear expert tips on the big issues and the hottest trends to level up your business game. If you're building a career or building a business, this is Must Hear Radio. Here's your host, Sarah Westall.
Welcome to Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall. Free markets only work if you remove the criminals. Welcome to part two of Professor William Black's interview. This is a very sobering look at the criminal activity that's been going on in our country over the last, well, it's probably been going on forever, right? Well, since the country started, but not to this degree. And the degree that it's going on now without any kind of prosecutions is what makes it so troubling and so awful for the future of our country. Basically, if you remove the criminals, everything works better. And without removing the criminals, our country just won't function properly. So we're going to get back into that interview. But before we do that, I am providing you a glimpse into next week's show about 3D printing. I figured I'd add this in because this interview has been such a sobering look at a dark part of our country, and I want to provide a uplifting view of what else is going on. And that really is the 3D printing world. People really believe that 3D printing is going to completely revolutionize every industry and create jobs. And it's going to be like the Renaissance age or the industrial age or the information age. It's going to be another age that we're entering into. And the changes that we'll see in industry will just be enormous. And so next week, we're going to be welcoming Craig Walker, who is the guru of 3D printing. He's coined as the guru. And I'm going to give you a little snippet right now of what part of our conversation or interview will be. Okay, so what are some of the unexpected uses that you've seen in 3D printing? I assume you haven't, it's hard to surprise you anymore, but what are some of the really cool unexpected uses that you've seen?
Well, the one thing that I think is mind-boggling, I'm going to go back to the Made in Space story. They're able to print tools in space. This is another great story about 3D printing and the same company, Made in Space. A gentleman came into Made in Space down in Silicon Valley a few years ago and was looking for a job, and Mike had told him that, I'm sorry, we're government-funded, we're just not hiring right now. He said, well, do me a favor, let me sit down at one of your 3D workstations and show you what I can do, and maybe you'll change your mind. So the gentleman sat down at the workstation and fired up AutoCAD, and he created this little box with a cone on the top and exported it as an STL or a stereolithography file and said, here guys, print this for me, will ya? And they took it over to the 3D printer and they printed it, and they found this object that was a square box. It's a little cone-shaped object at the top. And they said, what's this? And they said, oh, well, that's the fix for the oxygen canister that exploded on Apollo 13. And they said, what? Well, guess what? They sent it to Alabama and they tested it and it worked. So if the 3D printer that printed that item was on Apollo 13, back when that oxygen canister exploded, we never would have heard the expression, Houston, we have a problem.
Because they would have just reprinted one.
They would have reprinted it and the problem would have been solved.
So there'll be a lot more information shared with you about 3D printing and how revolutionary this will be to business in our country and all over the world. So now we are going to get right back into the interview with William Black. At the same time that they were prosecuting no one, none of the bankers, the true big-time criminals, we were increasing the amount of prosecutions over the last decade against petty crimes. We have more criminals in our prisons than any place in the world. And so that's a sad commentary to the fact that, you know, that we take one group seriously, people with no power and no money, and the other group we don't do anything to.
Yeah, as you know, I have a doctorate in criminology, and you could get, I think, 95% of criminologists to say that our priorities are not incoherent, but insane. Outright.
It's evil.
Blinkering insane and not a full drunk.
But people, and I have some more things I want to talk to you about. I have some more questions, but the average person needs to wake up and not be so naive. If we don't let people take advantage of us, then we could start prosecuting. It's the magnitude of the number of people that understand what's going on, right?
I mean, yeah, and that's
that. Go ahead.
That's my ultimate message. There's no reason to feel helpless.
I mean, if people knew.
We don't theoretically know how to get it done. We really know. We did it.
We do know how to get it done. It's basic management. Get the criminals out of the system. No one wants the criminal. The average person does not want the criminal in the system. They want a prosperous, peaceful country to raise their children, right? They want to make decent money. And we will have prosperity, and we will have a good place for our children if the criminals are out of the system.
Yes, and along these lines, what your listeners need to know about is something that both economics and criminology talks about, and that is a Gresham's dynamic. And I mentioned George Akerlof earlier. He's also one that dubbed that phrase in his most famous article on markets for lemons that is the one that led to the award of the Nobel Prize. And a Gresham's dynamic is when bad ethics drives good ethics out of the marketplace.
Exactly. That's a phenomenon that goes on in a lot of third world countries where there's so much corruption. But we're at that point. Go ahead, explain it.
Well, that's what they were deliberately creating, a Gresham's dynamic, they being the lenders, when they extorted the appraisers through the blacklist, right?
But do you think they do it on purpose and are smart enough to realize the whole country is going to hell because of what they're doing? Or do you think they're just so blinded by their greed that they just want their money?
Oh, well, they do it to get their money, but this is how they do it. They don't think of the national effect.
That's what I mean. They're just greedy criminals.
Yeah, but that's the thing. They don't have to be geniuses to be dangerous.
No. It's just they're greedy criminals, and unless we get them out, the effect is what you're talking about.
That is correct. But they deliberately do generate the Gresham's dynamic. That is not innocent. And by the way, since we've been talking about economists, George Akerlof dubbed it the Gresham's dynamic in 1970, which is, of course, a long time ago. But there's this guy that got it right a whole long time ago, and he said exactly the theme you were just talking about. So let me read it to you. I think your listeners will recognize almost immediately. The Lilliputians look upon fraud as a greater crime than theft, for they allege care and vigilance with a very common understanding can protect a man's good from thieves. But honesty hath no fence against superior cunning. Where fraud is permitted or connived at, or hath no law to punish it, the honest dealer is always undone, and the knave gets the advantage. And that, of course, is Jonathan Swift in Gulliver's Travels.
Woohoo! You know what? My son he is in his eighth grade history teacher has this game that they play where they have. He was a great teacher, and he teaches the kids that. You know, there's this game, and one group is criminals, one group is like police officers, another is a group that provide food, another one that does, I don't know, different roles in the society, right? And the thing is they have to work together to make sure the criminal doesn't take advantage, you know, of the other groups. And so they have to work together. But what it teaches them is that if you're greedy, if you care about yourself and don't work together, you will always lose. And human nature is to lose, is for the criminals to take over. Human nature is for the criminals to win. And this game is great. And it teaches these kids that if they don't work together to get rid of the criminals, they all lose. Everybody loses. And it reminds me of what you're talking about. It's Gulliver's Travels wisdom.
That's right. So competent regulations is what is not a whole lot of rules. And it's not the whole one size fits all.
It's simple.
But competent regulation is very, very good for honest business people.
Well, because you can't, even the most, even our libertarians, they say, okay, we want a free market society. But in order for that to work, we have to prosecute criminals. There isn't a political spectrum that doesn't want the criminals out of the system. This is not a political deal. This is everyone, you know, everyone.
Yeah. No, Ayn Rand and von Hayek specifically say
exactly.
That it is a state role to suppress fraud.
Ayn Rand, who is the most, you know, that's what Greenspan supposedly followed Ayn Rand, but what he didn't understand is that Ayn Rand said, this doesn't work unless you prosecute the criminals. It doesn't work. Because we need a free, prosperous society so that we can operate in a safe environment. It becomes not safe, and then you don't trust the honest people. When honest people don't trust each other, then you are forced to survival mode, which makes you a dishonest person just to be able to survive.
Well, this trust point is a good one. You've made it a couple of points. So let me tie it to theory and the crisis. So think about what fraud actually is. To commit a fraud, I have to get you to trust me, and then I have to betray your trust in order to take something of value from you and give it to me. And as a result, fraud is the most aggressive acid in eroding trust you can imagine, especially elite fraud. So the example I give is, we've all been to picnics or presentations where everybody gets a bottle of water. How many of us would drink our bottle of water if we knew that 1 in 100 of those bottles was contaminated? Long before fraud becomes endemic, it can cause a breakdown in trust.
It breaks down society at every level if you don't get this
right
under control.
And so I know a number of people wonder whether there really, really was a crisis or whether they were completely conned. There really, really was a crisis eventually because of all these terrible things that we've said were not dealt with for over a decade.
Well, can I ask you, go ahead. Go finish your point.
What happened is that over 1,000 markets simply ceased trading because bankers no longer trusted other bankers. Bankers were going, I wonder if they're playing the same games I am.
It's survival mode.
Asset value.
Yeah, it's survival mode. And so everybody starts behaving weird and you can't just trust. It's like any team at a big picture level. It's a team. If you don't trust each other, things don't work.
And here's the paradox. So that regular folks can trust, there has to be a group of us as professionals who are professionally skeptical. Not mean, not nasty. Not disbelieve everything, but skeptical. We really check whether those asset values are real.
You have to be knowledgeable enough. The thing is, people need to be educated so that they're knowledgeable enough to protect themselves. And the problem is that a lot of people just they don't feel the confidence. They don't feel they understand because it feels like it's so complex. It's not as complex as it is. I really don't think it's that complex, but the words and the jargon and the way they talk about it makes it seem really complex. And then once you start to understand it, it's really not that complex.
Well, I agree in part, but I'll push back in part.
Okay, well, good.
That.
So, let me learn something here.
What I've been saying in large part is agreement with you, right? At core, when you cut through all the complexity, these are fairly simple principles, like if you don't underwrite, you lose money. And we've known that for centuries. But it is, in fact, immensely complex to figure that out. For example, the supporting documentation, which is to say not supporting, for what was called the CDO squared, collateralized debt obligation squared, was over 1 million pages.
But the fact that it's complex, the fraud is complex, is why the average person needs to be protected by
exactly.
Because so, I can't protect myself. All my documents look good. They all look legitimate. There's no way I can protect myself from something behind the scenes that I have no access to. And that's
right. And so what I'm getting at is that the deregulators claimed, well, this is unambiguously good for people. We'll just give them, you know, finance education. And then they'll make good decisions. Well, that doesn't work. And we know that. We knew that for centuries. And you can see not just in the United States, but
doesn't work on Wall Street either. That's why I'm a bad stock person. Because this is a good company. They've gone up every year, even through the crisis in 2008. And I still don't make any money. But look at this one. This one's lost money, millions of dollars every year, but they're going like gangbusters. I'm sorry, I got off track, but
no, you did. But again, you've brought us back to, we all teach our kids the phrase, if it's too good to be true, it's probably too good to be true.
Yes.
Or some variant on that phrase, right? But we don't actually run our financial lives that way when it comes to Wall Street. And it is because, and this is what we emphasize as white collar criminologists. It is the seeming legitimacy of these entities that causes us to put down our guard.
Exactly. It's because you trust the institutions is why you just don't think a bank's going to steal from you on an ongoing basis. You just don't believe these things are going to happen. So you don't, your guard is down. But I have some questions because I've been talking to certain people and you know, in my interviews and so forth. And when I ask them, you know, why did we not go after some of these people? These are some of the things that I hear that they claim that Washington claims that the bankers did not commit the crimes because the laws that were rewritten or that were written to a degree that the behavior wasn't really illegal. I want you to comment on that.
Okay. So that's completely not true. It's true.
Because you hear that a lot. I know you've heard that comment too. Because that's what I've heard it from the top people. The president, I think, said that.
Well, he actually didn't, but he said things that everybody interprets that way. And I fault him. He was deliberately trying to claim that it was impossible virtually to prosecute. And for the reasons we've gone through, it wasn't. So, I hope has become clear is this crisis is enormously like the savings and loan debacle. It's a mortgage fraud crisis.
It's not that big.
And
that's what you're trying to say. Because the other claim that they had is that it's too hard and too expensive to prosecute because their people are so much more sophisticated than, I mean, they come with this army of really sophisticated legal team and we just can't go against them. It's just too expensive.
Right. And again, we fought the best criminal defense lawyers in America and we got a 90% conviction rate.
Yeah. It's the same thing.
It's mortgage fraud again. It's appraisal fraud again. It's crappy underwriting. It's liar's loans, which after all we dealt with.
So you know how directly, how to do it. We've done it.
Right.
You
we
just
know
do
how
good
to do
management.
It. And it is a crime.
So it's all baloney.
Right? So,
it's BS, and they just need to do the job and have courage, which having courage in this particular climate,
but they
I can
also
see is hard.
Need what you have been emphasizing, good management, and they don't have it. So they still haven't reestablished the criminal referral process. When I told you about the 120 FBI agents, all of them, they went to the credit of the FBI. They went to then Attorney General Mukasey, who was the last Attorney General under President Bush, and they said, this is crazy. You have just a handful of us. We're in groups of two and three in, you know, 50 offices across the nation. We can't possibly do any major investigations. So we're doing Fred and Nancy cases, right? We are, in essence, chasing mice while the lions roam the campsite.
It's a joke, and those people probably were really upset with their own jobs. I can't even imagine.
They were. But they're good. All FBI agents are also good soldiers, so they do what they're told. And so they said, to McCasey, you need to create a national task force and you need to prioritize the cases.
That's
and
why McCasey I couldn't be a good FBI agent because I'd be like, you guys are idiots. Why am I going after this mouse when this lion is creating 5,000 mice?
That is right. So McCasey refuses, but here's the reason he refused. He said these cases are simply the equivalent of, and I'm quoting now, white collar street crime. And of course he was correct, except for the small little thing that he assigned them to only look at white collar street crime. So of course, being good soldiers, they reported back on white collar street crime. All right. So that's crazy. And then without criminal referrals from the agencies, you do have criminal referrals from the bankers. But they're going to be against Fred and Mary type cases, right?
Yeah.
So they went out and they chased the mice. And
let's take
again,
those criminals
let's come back
down.
To the numbers.
Let's take them
right,
down.
Let's come back to the numbers. By 2006, 40% of all the loans, mortgage loans, originated that year for residential purchases were liar's loans. And they have a 90% fraud incidence. That means that in 2006 alone, over 2 million new fraudulent loans were made.
Jeez.
And you have 120 FBI agents. Do the math. So my metaphor for this is it's like going, you know, to a beach in San Diego and throwing handfuls of beach sand into the Pacific Ocean and wondering when you're going to be able to walk to Hawaii for a vacation.
Okay, so basically the people who run these banks are running our government and saying we do not want to be regulated. We're going to make it as small as possible. We're going to do whatever we want to rape and pillage and do what we want. And no one has a higher ethical moral viewpoint to say this is bad for our community, our society, and everybody around us. All I care about is greed. I mean, that's a sad commentary, and that's why the average person needs to step up and say, no, I am not going to take this. But I want to say one thing that I've been reading lately, and this has been going on in the last couple of years, that the government is allowing, you know, the OCC and the top regulators are allowing things like HSBC was laundering money for the major drug cartels, like the Mexico Sinaloa drug cartel, who killed thousands and thousands of people. And they were also laundering money for Al Qaeda and the other terrorist organizations. Why, if we're so against these, you know, we want to fight terror, why are we allowing the big banks to launder money for the terror organizations?
Okay, so we've just been talking about the frauds that caused the crisis, right? That hyperinflated the bubble, caused the crisis, caused the shutdown of the markets, caused the Great Recession, right?
Yeah.
In addition to those things, though, for the reasons you've been emphasizing, this creates a culture of fraud at
yes.
The world's most prestigious banks. And they make money by doing bad things. And if no one's going to prosecute you ever for doing the bad things, fraud is a really sure way of making money. So the ultra brief version of this is we have the largest fraud in the history of the world called LIBOR, the London Interbank Offering Rate.
The price fixing of LIBOR.
Right. This is the thing off of which almost everything in finance is priced. So if you gimmick this gauge, everything is wrong. And hundreds of millions of people lose money. Some others gain, by the way, but hundreds of millions, you know, that doesn't help me if I'm a fraud victim.
Yeah. Well, the people right? that gain okay. are the institutions, right? I mean, the people in
well,
charge.
Well, it's the players.
Yes.
It's the players within. Okay, so that is estimated that fraud corrupted and defrauded $350 trillion, again with a T, in transactions.
Woohoo! I mean, it's amazing.
Then they did the same thing in foreign exchange, which is called Forex or FX, right? And they fixed that as well to cheat. And that involves probably about 100 trillion or more. Then, as you said, HSBC funded, deliberately money laundered, knowingly money laundered, for one of the most murderous drug cartels in the world, the Sinaloa cartel, which, as you said, has killed thousands, beheading hundreds of them. When they were caught, and there were all kinds of warnings before then, when they were caught, no one was prosecuted.
That's crazy. That's, you know, that should make people angry. I mean, we should be up in pitchforks saying, why are you prosecuting the person down the street smoking marijuana, but you're not prosecuting these people?
Then, to make it better, which is to say worse, as you said, HSBC wasn't just doing this for drug cartels. It was doing it for nations that are on U.S. sanctions for supporting terrorism and for particular accounts. And it wasn't just HSBC. And now people need to know that this competition in laxity, the race to the bottom in regulation, as bad as it was in the United States, and people now know it was unbelievably terrible. It was worse in the city of London, because the city of London won, which is to say lost, the race to the bottom. And it is therefore the financial cesspool of the world.
Oh, geez.
So HSBC is based there, but Standard Chartered is also a British bank that concentrates on Far East Asia and the Middle East. And Standard Chartered, in addition to helping nations, you know, on these lists, as we've said, was deliberately helping Iran evade U.S. restrictions designed to prevent Iran from developing a nuclear weapon.
Oh, geez. So, you know,
Standard Chartered had training manuals instructing personnel on how to routinely remove information from files so that the United States could not spot this violation. And when the New York state authorities, not the feds, got this, and they got evidence from the key U.S. guy at Standard Chartered, he said that when he complained to London, what he got back was, "Who do you effing Americans think you are trying to tell us who we can make loans to?"
Oh, God.
Okay.
You know what? That's not any different.
That's our allies with our special relationship.
That's great. Great allies. Right. You know, it's not any different
But there's more. The state regulator then proposes to crack down, and the OCC and the Fed go crazy saying, "How dare you crack down on Standard Chartered?"
Oh, gosh. Well,
and they begin a leak campaign against the key New York state regulator. But then it turns out that everything the New York regulator said was true. And this is the point, you are correct, that they were finally embarrassed into taking an action. But they made it as weak, you know, very weak. And again, they prosecuted no one. Now, this went on, these frauds and violations of national security provisions went on for a full decade at both Standard Chartered and HSBC, and a number of people made their spurs within the organization and got promoted to high positions because of it. And it was going on at the same time that HSBC was doing the LIBOR scam and was doing the Forex scam and was deliberately selling completely inappropriate insurance product to depositors and was scamming all the small businesses and loans by putting them into ultra complex swaps that were completely inappropriate for them.
You know what? This isn't any different than Nazi Germany. When the banks were funneling money to Hitler to fund him, they're funding both sides of the war, right? And
I'm not going to go – I'm not going to make any Nazi comparisons or Holocaust comparisons, but it is awful, right?
You don't want to go
– you don't want to
go there?
I'm not going to go there. But I am going to say this – is a completely corrupt culture that has already caused massive harm to the world. And there was no meaningful response, which means the next time is going to be even bigger.
Well, I have a question for you. Do you think there are people in Congress that have any power whatsoever that understand how much the corruption is hurting the global and national stability of our world and are actually trying to make a difference?
Well, Elizabeth Warren is plainly doing so. There's, I think, some reason to believe that Senator Franken understands a lot of this as well. But no, again, this is not a partisan issue.
It's not a partisan
Both
issue.
Both parties are incredibly dirty at the highest levels, and in both cases, when it's your biggest donor or the person you hope to be your biggest donor, you don't want to think badly of them.
Well, I have another question. Do you think if Obama would have put his foot down and would have said, we need to crack down on this, do you think he could have done it without getting killed? I mean, being honest.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it would have made him spectacularly popular.
So you
not
think,
at first,
yeah,
but for the same reason, once you start the ball rolling and the public learns about the full extent of the fraud, can imagine a trial that would have gone on for 4 months in which they brought
– they clean it all up.
The HSBC and the Standard Chartered people. And they testified for weeks about the nature of the frauds, what the cartel is. The expert witnesses were put on about what these cartels were doing, about what Iran was believed to be doing, et cetera, et cetera. It would have transformed America.
Well, and that's the
Obama
task.
Obama would
then
be incredibly popular. The Democrats would have surged to victories in congressional elections. So it's actually good politics to be a good leader.
Oh, I would think so. Doing good work is good. But, you know, if there's – you have to do it at the right political time, because if everybody's against you, they defund you and you don't have the money to win the election.
Yes. And again, in Obama's case, he would not have ever been the nominee of the Democratic Party but for finance, right? And it's one of the most amazing stories of fundraising ever. This is, remember, back then, this is a one-term obscure senator from Illinois who is running against someone who was believed to have a lock on the nomination, Hillary Clinton, who, where the Clintons are notoriously close to big finance, right? Have been with Bob Rubin and such, there for them from the beginning, had significant contributions from big finance, but this unknown senator is able to out-fundraise on Wall Street Hillary Clinton and ultimately the Republican Party. So he must have had one hell of an elevator speech.
Well, he must have had some great speeches behind closed doors, because how does that happen?
Right. And that's the only thing that gives you the money to be able to buy the ads and, you know,
exactly.
Get and the polling and all those other type things that allow you to create the networks and win. So if you're President Obama, do you want to think badly of those people? We have a saying as humans, right? A friend in need is a friend indeed. The people that actually help me when I'm in my greatest hour of need, I think well of. That's human.
Yeah, but it's beyond that, right? If he's as bright as we think he is, he has to see the instability going on, and he's compliant. I mean, he's allowing it to go on. So,
people know, I hope, what a intense critic I am of Obama's decisions. I'm just saying I understand how these things happen, having, you know, lived and fought in Washington.
Well, how do you think this corruption affects the average person, consumers and small businesses?
Well, first, it caused 10 million Americans to lose their jobs. Even today, 6 years later, we have unemployment rate of ballpark 6%. And that's too high by at least 3%, you know, so it's at least double where you want to be in terms of full employment. So it has enormous effects there. It has enormous effects in terms of overall economic growth, and it has off the charts effects in terms of income inequality. So,
which is what we're seeing.
We're seeing, again, levels of inequality we haven't seen since the Great Gatsby era that led to the Great Depression and such. And it doesn't go to people who are meritorious, as for the reasons we've been going through at length. It goes to the sleaziest parts of our society. And that breaks down. That, again, creates aggressions dynamic in which other people who want to get to the top compete to be the sleaziest. So we have these deeply corrupt cultures. Another thing is, you know, they keep talking about how we have a shortage of people with math, you know, high math skills. Well, disproportionately, those people go to Wall Street, where they make the world worse.
Yes.
Instead of into physics and engineering and other science fields where they make the world better. That is, you can't calculate that, but that's an enormous loss to America.
Oh, absolutely, because I think the money is to be made, which is rightfully so, in the finance world. So our best and brightest, I shouldn't say all of them, but a majority of them are going to finance instead of going to things that make us stronger as a country.
Yeah, and if they did something good in finance, that'd be one thing.
Exactly.
But they're the ones that created these models that said, you know, that this toxic waste was AAA, which is the highest possible rating.
And the average
rating downgrade for many of these collateralized debt obligations I told you about is 20 grades.
Jeez. So now, and it's because when you get, and you being a criminologist, when you put good people in cultures and environments like that, is it easy to corrupt someone? I mean, what is going on psychologically? I mean, how does that happen?
So I talked earlier about Keating's frauds in which he targeted the widows. They figured out that the optimal person to put in the teller cage or at the desk selling the worthless junk bonds of the holding company to the widows was an 18 to 20 year old male.
And that's because
very clean cut, very well dressed, very polite and respectful. In other words, the grandsons they always wished they had instead of the ne'er-do-wells they often had.
So now it's because they come across as someone that's going to take care of them. Is it because those kids don't understand what they're really selling and the grandmas really love them? Is it the comedy? Yeah.
It's the combination, of
the
course.
The kids just
indeed.
Don't know what
many of these
doing.
Kids got their own parents into these deals.
Yeah, and they didn't know what
right?
they were selling.
Exactly. So this is the point. They have never had a professional job.
Mm-hmm.
They've never had a mentor, an honest mentor. And instead, they had competitions, bond buster T-shirts, prizes. And the really cynical stuff is after you've done that for a time, at the end of the year, they did skits. And we actually got the text of these holiday skits mocking their elderly victims.
Oh, geez.
Yeah. So you start out callow. easily, you don't know where you're going. This is how they model your behavior. And it becomes like, you know, some fraternity from hell, basically.
But why the male? And, why the males, not the females?
It's women, right? They really, really, really like the boys.
The well-dressed grandmas.
Yeah, the grandmas. Really, really like them. It's what worked best. And they'll do whatever works best. So
well, they don't care
testimony.
What they do yet. I'm just trying to understand the psychology behind it.
Right. So there's testimony out of the Financial Crisis Inquiry Commission about the current frauds. And along these same lines, they had the guy testify who did the training for Countrywide and other such places, right? He went all around the country training personally over 10,000 of these loan officers and loan brokers every year. And it's just read it. It's just everything you would fear from what we've been discussing. But it says, first, the typical prior job for these loan officers and loan brokers was flipping burgers.
Yeah. So
they never had a professional job.
And they sought those people out. I know the mortgage company.
That's right.
The mortgage company that I had a run-in with that got shut down for fraud in the bank, they were doing exactly that as well. They're hiring young people that have no experience to do all these things.
Right. So they're no experience, callow, no professional guidance except very, very bad guidance. Then he says, I trained them to have no interest in loan quality, that I knew we'd be writing crap. This is how he actually – I'm not making this up. He actually – this is his testimony on how he trained them.
Oh, geez.
And that it would easy – this is his phrase – for the best of him – of them, by which he means, of course, the worst of them – to make $1 million a year.
Well, and that's what they got. They had those money signs in their eyes of $1 million a year, and this is how you do it.
Right, and money signs from folks with no real training, who had no real prospects of actually making that money through honest endeavor. And so here's what people need to understand. It's less common in Minnesota. I lived for 20 years in California. It's very common to have, in jargon, non-conforming loans. And that just means a loan to buy a house that's more expensive than the Fannie and Freddie limits, which were, depending on the time period, $400,000-ish range, right? So for a $600,000 home in California, as one of these loan brokers, who, as you know, are the lowest folks in the totem pole of that's going to take money out of this deal.
Mm-hmm.
If you could convince the borrower to pay more than the rate sheet interest rate. So say you get, as a loan broker, you get these sheets every day from the lenders that say, we're willing to make the following loans on the following terms. And let's say it was willing to make this liar's loans for 6% interest rate. If you could convince the borrower to pay 7.5%, you could get a special fee for that, that in addition to your regular fee for this kind of $600,000, $800,000 home, your fee for just doing one deal as a loan broker was $20,000 roughly.
It's just crazy. For a young
that
kid.
That is your entire income last year flipping burgers.
Yeah,
How easy is it to make a loan if you get to make up people's income?
Oh yeah.
With no documentation.
It didn't take hard. It didn't take long to get those people to do that.
Right. So if the decision is, do I make $20,000 or not make $20,000 as a loan broker? What happens when you find out the borrower's income is $40,000 and it has to be $80,000 to be able to get your $20,000 fee?
Well, and that's the fraud that you were saying that could easily be.
Well, that's another aspect of the fraud, but not
establishing the
loss reserve.
It's not the fraud. It's another fraud.
Yes. Well, that's when we go biblical in criminology, this is what we say, you know, fraud begets fraud.
Yes. Well, okay, so that we can end this in a positive, because it gets pretty daunting.
People don't come to me for positive much, but I like it.
Let's try to end with, I mean, people want to know what they can do, right? So, well, let's start with, what do you think can be done to fix the level of corruption in the financial industry and the government? What realistic steps? And I guess it gets back to what you did in the SNL crisis, basic management. But what really can be done? I know you have Elizabeth Warren up there just, you know, doing everything she can. This needs to come from all sides of government. This is not a Democrat issue. It's not a Republican issue. It's not an independent libertarian. It's an everybody issue. What do people need to do?
Okay, so that's the first point.
Yes.
It is in everybody, and I urge people to think that way. You know, I have plenty of scar tissue from Democrats and from Republicans.
It's really important for people to think that, because if they start thinking it's a partisan issue, then we're in trouble.
Right. So the second thing is I would recommend a strategy of small wins, right? So you got to keep people up, and you can't simply say, you know, one day, 50 years from now, you know, our children may succeed. So pick some things, like there is no basis, period, at all for not having criminal referral coordinators and having them with their names in, you know, in the federal yellow books and easily found on the web and such, so that these criminal referrals can be made.
So basically we get some good managers in place, and then one by one they start to fix the little management problems all over the place. And those are big political issues.
Yeah, let's fix the things that are just absolutely – there's no pretense of politics that anyone can put on these things, right? You know, you're going to prosecute the folks. That's not Republican or Democrat. So let's – have you heard the President of the United States and Eric Holder ever get up and praise the whistleblowers who made possible the cases against J.P. Morgan and Bank of America – and Citigroup.
Of course not.
Of course not. Okay, they can do that tomorrow. They could do that tonight.
Yeah, that would be great.
This little thing called the State of the Union address. Right?
It will be interesting how he talks about all this corruption. That will be an interesting. I bet he. I want to see if he's going to totally, you know, sweep it aside, or if he's going to, how he's going to talk about it.
Right. So you do that. You, you know, at every press conference when the Justice Department has had to brag about their civil cases where they never prosecute anyone.
They get money.
All of those were made possible by whistleblowers. And they have in no one of those press conferences announcing the civil case that I've been able to find, have they ever mentioned the existence of the whistleblower or praised him or her?
Okay, so the government officials should start making a culture of praising the people that are bringing criminal things forward.
And make a massive effort to go find them before the statute of limitation runs. Right? Then we should say you cannot, if you're on a committee, receive money from anybody who has business in front of that committee. That's a clear conflict of interest, right? Would we ever let judges take money from the people?
No.
Nope. Now, that one's not going to pass. We all know it's not going to pass, but it'll embarrass the hell out of them.
So basically, we, one by one, go after these little issues and start to create a different environment. So what can the common person do to make a change?
Well, they actually, in the case of Minnesota, could get people who would actually listen to them. And I'm not, again, suggesting that this is unique to him, but you have a senator who's been talking about some of these issues, and the others, I see no reason to believe that they'd be hostile to it. So it's the old thing. People I know think that they're very sophisticated and that nothing ever changes and we should all be helpless. And I tell you, having been in Washington, members of Congress get worried when the mail, the emails, the cables, the telexes start piling in. So you don't have as much voice as you should because of campaign contributions, but you, the voice that you have left, if you don't exert it now, you lose it too.
So the common person needs to get their voice heard, and they need to communicate with others who don't think it's an issue to tell people, hey, this corruption issue is an issue. It's our biggest issue. And
we're go ahead.
No, go ahead.
And we're trying, you know, along these lines at the University of Minnesota Law School to do some of these things. So, you know, we're trying to create a regulatory network of folks, again, that's not partisan, doesn't take stands on the issues, but tries to get the people together to learn about these things. We think that will help produce some good decisions. And colleague Claire Hill is trying to get together precisely this kind of, hey, it ain't politics group of people that want to make these concrete reforms in things that are not really partisan, that are, as you say, are really along the lines of good management.
Well, it's good management, and it can't be viewed as partisan. Criminal behavior is criminal behavior. It hurts all of us, and it's just not a partisan issue.
It's integrity.
Yes. Yes, it is. So, leaving it with that.
So, again, we're trying to do this on a small basis, and, you know.
And people can help you, and people can help the law department. How? How can people help that?
Well, they can actually sign up on some of these efforts if they're interested enough. And people can also, you'll see, I'm the editor of a blog, you know, New Economic Perspectives. This is more with my University of Missouri Kansas City hat, but it's not local in any way.
This is a national deal. So anybody.
It is.
Yeah, go ahead.
But you should act locally
yes.
often as well as nationally, I will tell you. It's a good strategy. And I would say you don't have to always do one and then the other. I think we can do a number of these things in parallel.
Well, I think we could support, like, our local universities that are making a difference. If your university does not have a program like that, look and see what the other universities are doing and build one. Do something. Let's all work together to make a difference. And the average person can support the programs that are going on to clean up our act.
Right. And we think this is the type of thing where we need desperately Main Street to stand up, because it is Main Street that in many ways is being targeted by Wall Street. Wall Street always claims to be the friend. And, you know, there's that old joke by President Reagan that the scariest nine words in the English language is, I'm from the government and I'm here to help you. But in fact, lots of governmental people, that's exactly what they do. They run into burning buildings. They go in as police officers to stores in the dark of night, risking being shot. And, of course, our armed services. But lots of other folks take on powerful people for the benefit of folks. Goldman Sachs doesn't do that. When Goldman Sachs comes,
when they come to shake your hand
and says, I'm here to help you, you should run from the room screaming, clutching your wallet with both hands.
Why are they here?
Right. So we really need Main Street to make a break, because Wall Street talks for Main Street. And frankly, the Chamber of Commerce at the national level is just way, way, way too dominated by Wall Street type concerns as opposed to Main Street. The whole idea of financial services of this kind, banks, is they're supposed to be middlemen. And the efficiency condition for a middleman is lean and mean. Instead, they take 40% of all corporate profits in America,
yeah,
roughly.
They're killing us. They're killing our country. There's no – and if you look at the
– They are parasite. They are a literal parasite on Main Street.
During the first decade of the 2000s, if you look at – and I just knew there was a huge problem. It was weird. I was looking at all the charts on the stock market. The only industry that was kicking butt was the financial industry.
Right.
That's now, not possible.
I want to make something else clear, especially in this quest for allies. I'm talking about Wall Street. I'm not talking about banks in general. There are lots of very good regional banks and community banks.
We need banks, and we need good people
there.
That's right. They provide a really important service for our country.
And they cannot compete with the Wall Street banks.
Exactly.
The Wall Street banks have this enormous implicit subsidy that nobody ever voted them, that no one ever would vote them in a real democracy, from too big to fail. And if anybody thinks too big to fail is ended, they are living in a fool's paradise.
Well, and the small banks are getting hosed. It's a monopoly, essentially, and they're just there. Aren't they just there as window dressing, kind of? I mean, they allow enough. So
no, they're there because they make the real loans that keep America functioning. Wall Street is the window dressing.
That's true. But I was saying them allowing, but I suppose that does make sense. I didn't think about it that way. They don't even want to do those loans.
No, they refuse. I mean,
they don't care. They want them around. They don't want them.
No, their system is not built for them. And remember, the exact number vary from month to month. But when we're talking about financial derivatives, the top five banks in the United States do, depending on the time and how you count them, 90 to 95% of all those derivatives trades. So we're not even talking about Wall Street. We're talking about the subset of the biggest and baddest of the banks. All of them, every single one, has been identified as committing multiple frauds by the federal government. Not prosecuted for them, but identified in civil complaints as having led massive frauds. And nobody gets prosecuted. So guess what the leadership is like?
Yes.
And we need candidates, right? Again, I don't care which party they run on, but if they run as this is what I'm going to change.
And they need to take it on, and people need to support that. People need to to support cleaning up the system. Elliot Spitzer was doing a pretty good job in New York. He was like a one-man show taking people down, and then he got taken down. Do you think what he did was real, or do you think they set him up?
Oh, no. Unfortunately, it was real.
Oh, geez.
I know Elliot Spitzer.
That's too bad. That's too bad, because he was doing such good stuff.
He was. And remember, he still is that person as well.
Sure, yes. It's just too bad.
So it's one of the things is, are we going to find a way as a society to take advantage of his talents? No, he brought himself down. Now, that doesn't mean people weren't eagerly baying for his blood.
Oh, I'm
and,
sure.
Very
oh,
eager
yeah.
to get him, but he gave them the ammunition. He knows that.
He's probably kicking himself. What did I do?
Oh, every hour.
Because he knows he has to be clean. If I'm doing this, if you're taking people down, you have to be clean.
That is right.
But, okay, well, you know what? I want to thank you so much for spending this time with me and educating all of our listeners. I think this is one of the most important things that we can do. And I can't understate how important this is to our country and even to the global stability of just to clean up this criminals. It's, you know, and I personally had some experience with this, so I know how destructive it is to businesses and to just to the average citizens. And, you know, we get sidetracked in politics by, you know, they get them sidetracked. When the Federal Reserve was giving out trillions, they were all arguing over the $20 billion that they were given to the welfare recipients. I mean, they do whatever they can to distract people. And people really need to realize where the issues stand.
Yeah, it's important to understand, for example, that it was overwhelmingly lenders and their agents that put the lies and liars' loans. But they, you're right, they want us to turn on the poorest people. This is the richest people in America want us to turn our wrath on the poorest people.
And
that's
And the other thing is
odd thing, right?
And the other thing, well, it is. It's awful. And the other thing, it's not the wealthy that have built a good company and has jobs for people, and they're just providing so much good to our country. Those aren't the people that we're talking about. Those people are heroes. You know, those people work hard. They've created industries. They're wealthy and they've earned it. We're not talking about that. We're talking about the people that steal and pillage and hurt. You know, they commit frauds. Those people need to go.
Right. We have to make sure that the knave doesn't get the advantage and the honest merchant is undone.
Exactly. So with that, I'm going to thank you for joining us today, and I hope you have a wonderful day. And you're probably going to watch the State of the Union tonight, and hopefully there's some positive things for once out of that.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Yeah, appreciate you're welcome.
It. To learn more about what you can do to make a difference on this subject, visit William Black's blog at neweconomicperspectives.blogspot.com. Or visit my radio page and you will see all the different ways that you can connect to him. I have his email. He has actually has two different blogs and a Twitter account. So you can get hold of him that those different ways. And he has lots of different information about economics and what's going on in the world of finance. And most of it deals with the criminal activity and how we can improve that aspect of our lives. And me, for one, I would like to see these guys get nailed and thrown away, and, you know, put them in prison and throw away the key. Honestly, there's no reason to have any of these guys walking around free when it's destroying everyone else's ability to function and just make a living. Okay, remember to visit my radio page and please support the sponsors. That's how we stay in business here and keep this going. So thank you very much and have a wonderful day.